as we've discussed previously, and as some of you may recognize from reading the language of the Harsha that we sign with the Rav, in addition to selling chametz, we also transfer to the non-Jew the premises in which the chametz is located, either as a sale or a rental. We'll discuss tonight...
The premises or the location in the premise?
We'll discuss that a little bit also. There are various reasons for this. In the beginning of our study of chametz, we discussed one reason. That was the idea of making a kinyan. One of the various kinyanim we make on the chametz is done via the transfer of the premises, either kinyan chatzer, that when we transfer the premises to the non-Jew, then it's his, and then he's kona the chametz because it's in his chatzer, or kinyan agav, that a different kinyan that by agav many posts can think is the best kinyan, that by transferring the real property to him, the chametz piggybacks along with it. Big difference between chatzer and agav is whether you have to transfer those particular premises or not. If you want to do chatzer, then by definition you have to transfer the premises in which the chametz are located. If you just want agav, the halacha is we paskin lo bay tiburin. You don't need the metalton to be in the particular karka that you're transferring. You can transfer karka anywhere in the world, and agav transfer the same chametz. So agav transfer the chametz. So if the goal is simply to make a kinyan, especially if you're relying on agav, there wouldn't be any particular need to transfer those premises. You would just have to transfer some karka somewhere in the world. The truth is, however, there are a number of other reasons why we do transfer the specific premises to the non-Jew, independent of the question of kinyan. And as we'll see, there actually are two distinct customs whether the property should be sold or rented to the non-Jew. There are actually major arguments both ways. There are advantages and disadvantages both ways. So we'll explore tonight and this week what the history of this machlokas is and what the various arguments are both ways. So the early poskim often use language that describes selling the property to the non-Jew. So for example, the Magen Avraham, in Siman Tav Ches, the Magen Avraham says that, you know, ideally you actually take the chametz out and the non-Jew takes delivery, takes physical possession. If you can't, then yimker lo gam hacheder. Then you should sell him the room. What about renting him the room? Magen Avraham doesn't get into the question of whether renting would be an option or not. What about renting him the room? So the Bach already, even before the Magen Avraham, the Bach explicitly rules out the possibility of renting. Why can't you rent him the room? So the Bach comes up with two completely different reasons. One reason, he says, is Schiris Lo Kanya. Schiris Kanya, Schiris Lo Kanya is a sugya we've discussed previously. It's a general question, a lamdush question in halacha. How does halacha look at a rental where the Torah says you need to own property or you need to not own property? How do you look at schiris? Is it considered yours, the landlord's, or his, the tenant's? And obviously, it's both. You still own the goof and he owns the right to use it. But whatever, there's a halacha that says that the property has to be yours for some purpose, for bring bikurim, for not bring avodah zarah into your house, for having your behemah not work on Shabbos, things like that. What if the property is rented out, is it considered yours or not yours? Is it the landlord's or the tenant's? We paskin schiris lo kanya. The Bach says, therefore, if you rent the premises to the non-Jew, it's as if you didn't do anything at all. Schiris lo kanya. And you back to square one, it's still considered your property. And therefore, the Bach says is not enough. We'll have to discuss why in a minute. The Bach is that begs the question, why does it have to be not your property? Assuming you've made proper kinyanim, why do we care if it's your property or not? That we'll still have to discuss. The other reason the Bach gives is a completely different reason. He refers to a sugya elsewhere in Hilchas Pesach, Siman Tafnun a little bit, based on Yerushalmi and Agur or other sources, that you are not allowed to derive benefit from chametz on Pesach, even by renting out property that will be used for chametz. There's Yerushalmi that seems to imply that that's called being nene, being mstaker from chametz. Even though you're not getting paid for chametz, you're getting paid for the premises, and even if he doesn't use it for chametz, he still owes you the rent. Afal pi kein, there is some kind of din that even that's usher, that you're not allowed to, that's called deriving benefit from chametz, even indirectly.
Even if that's not explicitly the reason given for the rental, just a general rental? Or?
So that's the question. That's a whole discussion of the postkim, when that applies, if that was the explicit reason for the rental, if that's not the explicit reason for the rental, if it's not explicitly given, but it's clear that's the purpose. So we'll discuss some of these things as we go, but potentially that's the Bach second problem. Now, many poskim did debate this question. Now, if it would be a sale, that would not be a problem. If you sell it to him, even if it's for chametz, it's not yours anymore, that's not a problem at all. The sale is final, but and then before Pesach, that's not an issue. The issue is only if the property is still yours and you're being paid for the use of the property over Pesach being used for chametz, that's a problem. So that actually, we have a major debate in the Achronim. If you are going to use chira, it's not like this bach, how do we get around this problem? So there are three or four approaches to why what we do is not a problem. Some poskim, along the lines of Rabbi Sussman just suggested, said that the crucial question is whether the lease, the rental, explicitly says that it's going to be for the storing of chametz or not, for the warehousing of chametz. As long as they don't say that explicitly, it is fine. Shlomo seems to learn like that. Some Achronim say that's the heter. The Stechemed wants to learn that must be what the Shulchan Aruch Harav held based on certain considerations. So there are some Achronim who say this far, that as long as you don't say explicitly that it is for chametz, this problem doesn't apply. The problem with this approach, if the Chemed feels this is somewhat of a dachuk, is other Achronim say, because it doesn't matter what you say, if it is 100% clear that's the purpose, it doesn't matter. So in Ar Mechiras Chametz, where there's no chance in the world that there's any other purpose for these premises than storing the Chametz, it barely even knows where they are, the whole thing is a formality just for keeping the Chametz over Pesach, it's transparently clear to both parties that is the whole purpose of the rental. Some poskim say, we're back to square one, it's as if you said it explicitly, and the issur of renting for chametz kicks in, and that's a problem, and therefore a sale would be preferable. If we want to still justify rental, what other options do we have? So another issue is, when does this issur take effect? So the language of the Agur is that it's usher to rent it on Pesach or on Erev Pesach. Now some achronim, like the Bach, who's a big machmer, the Bach L'Shitasei, the Bach in Siman Tafnun says, Lav Davka Erev Pesach, once it's Aser before Pesach, it's Aser 30 days before Pesach, where the Chi of Beer comes, the Chiyuvim of Beer Chametz and of being concerned about Chametz already begins. In Lamdas, I don't fully understand that, why the Chi of Beer has to do with the Isser of being Nana from Isser Chametz, I'm not sure, but Lahalacha.
Erev Pesach only means Acher's
Mani Surah. We'll get to that in a second. But the Bach seems to understand Erev Pesach is Lav Davka Acher's Mani Surah, like Rabbi Sussman is saying, once it's Pesach morning, there's no difference between. However you understand Pesach morning, you understand 2 weeks before Pesach also, 30 days before, is a problem. So the Bach Tak is very machmer. Many other Achronim, though, understand that it's only Erev Pesach. Some Achronim understand that Erev Pesach, like you're saying, Erev Pesach, if it's 8 o'clock in the morning, is the same as any other day. So some Achronim understand that if you say Erev Pesach, you must mean Erev Pesach after the Zman Isser. So when the Augur says either on Pesach or on Erev Pesach, they mean after the Zman Isser. As long as you're doing the transaction before the Zman Isser, which obviously is what we're doing, because we want to sell the Chametz before it's Usser, then there is no problem, and this whole Isser doesn't apply. So that is the second approach, that we don't care b'chlal about this Isser as long as the transaction is being done before the Zman Isser Chametz. There's actually a third Shita, which says that the Derech Pekudecha the Stechemed brings, he says he understood there is something unique about Erev Pesach. Somehow it is more chamer, even though it's before the Zman Isser, than 2 days before. And he, Taka, said that if you're going to rent the premises to the non-Jew, it has to be done a day before Erev Pesach. That's something we're not usually machmera. We usually do sell chametz on Erev Pesach, so we don't go like that shita. So we hold like one of the other shitas involved, one of the other eterim involved, if not explicit. This was only on Pesach or after the Zman Isser, but he actually held that if you want to do schiras to avoid this problem of the Bach, to avoid this problem of renting premises for the warehousing of chametz, you have to do it a day before. So in all the poskim, you find one of these various approaches. Some achronim said, just don't mention explicitly. The Shiva Sion says, just don't say explicitly that it's for chametz. Other poskim say, do it a day before Erev Pesach. And some say it doesn't matter b'chlal, because the issur is only if you do this transaction after the Zman Isser. So that's one argument to the Bach, this problem of renting explicitly for chametz. Now again, if you do a sale, this wouldn't be a problem. So that's an easy advantage for sale. But many people, most poskim say rent, and you have to go through one of these approaches to justify it. The other problem with the Bach is that schiris lo kanya, it's as if you own the premises. The question is, so what? Why does it matter if I own the premises? I don't own the chametz. The issur is having chametz, not in having premises that have chametz in them. So what's the problem? So the main exponent to this view is really the Makar Chaim. With all the Achronim who are mefalpel on this problem, the discussion starts with a Makar Chaim again, back in Siman Taf Mem. Makar Chaim brings a din that besides not being allowed to own chametz, you're also not allowed to have achrayas of chametz. Now, what does achrayas mean? So certainly it means halachic achrayas. If you accepted, from a halachic perspective, contractually achrayas for the chametz, responsibility for loss or damage, then that's a problem. However, there is a shita in the Rishonim, and the Shulchan Aruch brings this shita, at least as the Yesh Omrim, there is a shita, even if you don't have halachic achrayas or legal achrayas, if you have de facto achrayas, if practically speaking you know that the non-Jew is going to hold you responsible for the loss of the chametz, even if he has no right to do that, that's also called achrayas, because you are responsible for the chametz in a de facto sense. Says the Makar Chaim, every time we sell chametz, we don't get paid the full value up front. Obviously, we never do that. The non-Jew makes a small token payment. He doesn't give all the money up front. Says the Makar Chaim, if that chametz gets lost, you are not going to see the rest of the money. You're not going to actually get that appraiser in and say the chametz must have been worth $10,000. Now go write him a check, even though the house burned down. That's not happening. Realistically, it's a harama, he says. They treat it as a harama. We treat it as a harama. Again, why harama? Why harama would mean alpidin tari, you can't sue for the money? I'm not sure. Certainly, he says, as far as he's concerned, he's not paying you the money. That's called achrayas, he says. The halacha of achrayas is that if you have achrayas, then it's usher to have achrayas for chametz if the chametz is in your rishus. It's only mutter to have achrayas for chametz if the chametz is in the non-Jew's rishus. Therefore, either he takes, since you have achrayas, he has to take actual delivery, or that's not practical today. So short of that, the only solution is to sell or rent him the premises. Rent will not work, the Makar Chaim says, because Chiris Lokanya, we paskin, he brings Machlokas, Rashi, and Tosis. He says that the way we paskin, renting is not going to work. That could be with the Bachman too, that because of this problem of Achrayas, the Chametz cannot be in your premises, Chiris Lokanya, and therefore you must actually sell the property. Now, the Makar Chaim does give us a big kula. He says this is only a problem, you only need to sell the property if you actually own it. If you yourself are only a tenant, then renting it is fine. Because if you rent it in the first place, and then you rent it to the non-Jew, you have nothing left. Whatever you had in the first place, you then flip to the non-Jew, so you cancel out. Then it's fine. The problem is only if you own it outright, if it's your house, if you hold the title to it, and you only rent it to the non-Jew, then because Chiris Lokanya, that's still considered Chametz Ubeso Shel Yisrael. Therefore, the Makar Chaim is the most important of the Shitas who hold. It is not enough, in the case of an actual homeowner, it is not enough to rent the premises to the non-Jew because of this problem of achrayas chametz beis shel Yisrael. Therefore, you must do an actual sale. That's the sheet of the Makar Chaim.
Discuss if you're a Jew renting from a Jew, though, because then the other Jew may not be getting out of the problem if you just rent it.
Yeah, I was thinking of that. He does not discuss that. I didn't see any actual discussion. As we go through the sugya this week, we'll have to see if anybody raises that problem, that you're just pushing the problem back on the landlord. So yeah, I'm not sure how to deal with that, but that is an interesting point. So the Makar Chaim held that if you're a homeowner, you actually have to sell. Many Achronim, perhaps most Achronim, don't hold like this. The Bir Halacha summarizes that most Achronim don't go like the Makar Chaim. And the Minhag, I think, in most Shtaris is that we rent rather than sell. The Achronim will bring the Shtar in the Shiva Sion. The Shtar of Shiva Sion was a son of the Nadi Yehuda. He brings the Shtar that his father was Misakein to do, the Mechiras Chametz. Also, it says that we do a rental, not a sale.
What are we renting exactly?
The premises in which the Chametz are located.
But we don't ever specify what we're renting.
So specification is a whole separate question. How specific do you have to be? That itself is a whole headache. It touches on some of the issues we discussed previously. Can you have a valid sale without specification? That's a question. But we usually actually do specify at least some level of detail. We usually are asked for an address, and typically the shtar will ask for an address of where the chametz is located, and even for a secondary location if you have an office. How detailed do you want to be? Exactly which closet? Exactly which shelf? It's a different question, but we usually do ask for at least some level of specification. So I just want to discuss briefly a few of the other issues involved here. Some of the Achronim who argued for rental rather than sale, assuming you can get around the Makar Chaim's problem, that first of all, not all poskim agree that achrayas of an anas is considered achrayas. Even if it is, other poskim still feel that renting the premises may be enough. They point out that the idea that schiris lokanya, the Gemara itself brings up this question of schiris lokanya, and the Gemara says it's not a problem because for Hilchas Pesach, the standard is more lenient. All you need is lo yimatzi lachan. This is not called matzi. So the Gemara itself seems to reject the application of the rule of Schiris Lokanya. Now the truth is, it's based on this Machlokas Rashi. And Tosfos, Rashi learns the sugya is talking about with his no achrayas. That's why the Makar Chaim is machadish that if there is achrayas, then you don't have that. Then you don't have the Gemara's Maskana. But so the point is, there is a Machlokas. We'll see more about it this week whether we accept the Chiddush of the Makar Chaim. Many Achronim though actually preferred Schiris for a variety of reasons. One reason is because the Kenyan is easier. If you're making a sale of karka, then you need a shtar, the Gemara says. Might be ways around that, but pashas need a shtar. Schiros, they say, the derech is not necessarily to write a shtar, so the kinyan is more lax. You can use just kesef. The different Malkiel brings the question we discussed previously about a shtar that wouldn't be considered legally valid. Transferring real estate, transferring title needs all kinds of formalities. You can't just transfer title by a handwritten note in the back of an envelope, but if you're just doing a rental, then the rules are much more lenient. You can have a legally recognized rental without some of the formalities. Divrei Malkiel himself brings a very novel issue, very novel reason to do schiros as opposed to mecher. He says if you actually sell your house to the non-Jew, you're going to have a real problem with mezuzah. He says you can leave the mezuzah on, that's not a problem, because there's no danger of any bizarion happening to it. The problem is when you buy the house back, you may need a new bracha on the mezuzah, because as long as the house was owned by the non-Jew, it was not chayev in mezuzah, and when you buy it back, it's a new chayev. So maybe you should actually have to take it off and put it back on. Maybe it's a shalaf tassel of an asi, but I'll call upon it, you need a new bracha. So it's a major issue, he says. This actually parallels a...
That same is true with Vilas Kalin.
Yes, as Dr. Mond is saying, this parallels a similar concern. We're discussing now the premises, the real estate, not the Kalim, but in Kalim also, Kalim that have chametz, either on the surface or embedded as blias, there's also a major debate among the Achronim whether the Kalim should be sold or rented. One of the arguments against selling is that if you sell, then you might have to be tovel the Kalim when you buy them back. So the Divrei Malkiel invented a similar concern here. You shouldn't actually sell the property to the non-Jew, because then mezuzah becomes an issue, the Ptur and the Chiyuv. That was one reason he had. Another reason he had to prefer Schirus to Mecher. Another concern that even the earlier Achronim raised already is the whole idea of subletting. When we learned the laws of Schirus, we learned there are rules about subletting. Normally, you're allowed to sublet, barring any contractual stipulation to the contrary. You're allowed to sublet provided the new tenants are not any heavier or not any don't have any increased stress or increased wear on the property that you're subletting. But you're not allowed generally to sublet to a non-Jew. The assumption is Jews. If the landlord is a Jew, there's an automatic rule or assumption that you should not be subletting to a non-Jew. And B, some of the Achronim say that rental contracts in their time typically contained a no subletting clause. So how do we get around these problems? So the common sense solution, which some of the Achronim say, is that you're worried about that the landlord doesn't want you to sublet. He doesn't want you to really sublet, to actually leave the premises and transfer to somebody else. It's this kind of thing where nothing's happening. It's the same cans of pasta, the same boxes of pasta and bags of flour sitting on the shelf. The non-Jew is probably not going to step foot in the premises. And if he does, it's your house. You'll be keeping an eye on him anyway. There's no real danger. As the Divrei Malkiel puts it, he says, you're not allowed to rent your house out to somebody else. But if someone asks you, I'd like to pay you $20 to just store my bicycle in your house while I go away for a month on vacation. So no one says you're not allowed to do that. He says, you're not allowed to put a new tenant in the house, but just to allow the non-Jew to use part of your house while you're still there, there's no reason he would be concerned. So that kind of svara, that post can say that this is not the sort of subletting that really would run afoul of the laws of subletting. Other posts can go on, not so sure.
That's part of the place. Then.
Right, it's only part of the place, and you're not vacating, and he's not really coming in. And because of all these different svaras, many Achronim say, this is not the sort of subletting that really we have any reason to believe would bother the landlord, not the sort of subletting he had in mind when he wrote the no subletting clause. Additionally, he says he's a Jew and he wants to cooperate in Mechiras Chametz, and it's like he gave you automatic permission to engage in these types of transactions. So that's what some Achronim say. You don't really have to worry about the whole the normal rules of subletting. On the other hand, some poskim were not so thrilled with this. The Shiva Sian himself, which is one of the primary sources for the minhag of renting, actually says that ideally you really should be going to the landlord if possible. If you're a tenant, you really should be going to your landlord and telling him, I'm making Mechiras Chametz, I would like your permission to sublet to the non-Jew. If you can, that's fine. But the other Achronim say, A, it's often not practical. The landlord's not around sometimes. B, what if your landlord is a non-Jew? The issue of subletting might still apply. The law might prevent you, and he's not necessarily going to want to cooperate if you try explaining to him what you want to do. So l'maisa, the Achronim debate about whether the schirus from Mechiras Chametz, certainly selling, but even schirus, whether it would violate the rules against subletting.